spider just came like right in front of my face.
Do you think there's a connection?
It's on my mic now. Come here, little guy. Connected in a grand sort of way. Kind of want him off my mic now.
Give him a good plosive.
There's some dirty wordplay around the word come, but never mind.
I refrained from that. I heard it too, Thistle Web. I think the right joke was to make was, how did you even see something that small?
No, not the Beatles.
You don't like the Beatles?
No. I'll tell you, I do like the Beatles, right? But the thing I've got with the Beatles is they stunted me as a guitar player. I only realised this about a month ago, and I was actually meaning to write a blog post about it. Is when I learned the guitar years and years and years and years ago. Unfortunately, the band that I took to be
Thistle Web is dropping off.
I think Thistle Web missed most of that.
Well, I don't have to play the Beatles. I mean, geez.
No, don't get me wrong. I like the Beatles.
I don't like the Beatles.
Nah,
I like some of the Beatles.
You can always tell a John Lennon tune or a McCartney tune in the Beatles.
Pipe Man, what distro are you using these days in terms of multimedia? I mean.
There's some cake. I'm using KX Studio.
And is that just a set of repos now, or it's an actual distro?
It's always been a distro. The distro itself, the repos are up to date for every version of Ubuntu, but the distro itself is only long-term support.
Klaatu, you asked the exact same question like 3 nights ago in the IRC.
Really? Weird.
He must not have gotten an answer.
Well, I don't remember it, so.
Okay. Yeah, you know, now that I think of it, I remember him typing it. I don't remember the answer.
I think it was in the open source musician room.
Yeah,
that's what kind of excerpts, you know, and he goes back and forth, and he misses these things.
Yeah, so KX Studio is awesome. The guy who does it is, he's in, I'm trying to remember the name of the country. Portugal. He's Portuguese. And, I mean, he's prolific. He's the guy who actually wrote the Jack Patch for Mumble. And he was on my donation list for this year. So I donated to him, to Wikipedia, to, let's see. I do a monthly donation to Ardor. I'm trying to think. There's some more in there.
Here's a question inspired by that. Do people find that they are spending money on software now that they're using free software, or are you not spending any money? Like for me, I am happy to donate to the projects that I use, and I find that like my software bill, quote unquote, hasn't really gone down, but I'm much happier paying rather than having to pay for software that I don't even like in the first place.
Well, I mean, Ardor is probably easily the most expensive piece of software I've ever used.
Yeah.
In terms of what the hardware you could attach to it, and it makes you run out and buy stuff?
No. How much I've given to the project?
KDE and KDE Live.
I bet I'm close to about $600 in on Ardor.
Holy cow.
I've been donating $10 a month for 5 years, and I've done a couple $100 donations in there.
Then I should thank you personally, because I use Ardor all the time.
Yeah.
Thank you.
But I mean, personally, I don't mind paying, because when I was on Windows, I never paid for anything anyways. I just pirated stuff.
I got to tell you, you know, I mean, we never talk about it. We always hawk around this subject in free software. But the fact that it is free as in beer is a huge, huge attraction to me, and I think to a lot of people. Sure. You know, I could not afford any of the software just about that I have on this machine right now. I absolutely could not. If I had to run out and buy Windows, I couldn't do it. And that is a massive thing for me. And, you know, I mean, I would love to be able to contribute money to different projects that I think are great. But honestly, I can't. And, you know, it's just something I wish I could do. But, you know, there's just no way. And I don't personally, I don't think people ought to feel like they have to. If you give back things like bug group, stuff like that. But the fact is, no one would write this stuff if no one was using it.
I agree with what you're saying, Lost in Bronx.
I don't think anybody should feel guilty if they're not capable. Sorry.
I think we might be saying the same thing, but I was going to say, yeah, I don't think people should hesitate to use the software and not pay for it. That is part of the deal. It's like part of the attraction. And at the same time, I think that it's nicer to, when you can pay, it feels better to pay to those projects, and you don't have to pay as much, you know? I mean, I used to pay a lot of money. Well, my dad would pay a lot of money for some software that I thought I needed, and it never did do what it was supposed to do anyway. So it just, we're kind of spreading it around. You know, we each pay a little bit to the stuff that we use or not, but it's the burden isn't on one person, I guess.
Yeah, if you do pay it, it's hitting the developer directly. It's not like you're paying, you know, Microsoft for the great driver that somebody wrote for your wireless card, and you know, because they're not going to get that.
Pokey, that's a perfect reason why donating free software is better than running out and buying a packaged piece of software, downloading it from some big company's website. I mean, the fact is, the people whose fingers actually typed in that code are the ones who are going to be pocketing the money. I mean the value of that in and of itself is massive, because that gives those people incentive to continue doing what they're doing.
Now, I have a question for you guys regarding this, because I'm in the same kind of position Lawson Bronx is in. I can't afford to pay anything. If I had to pay for a streaming client, or if I had to pay for an install of Windows or some other such thing, I could not have it. I would have to steal it. And by the way, that there's a big distinction there. I've heard a couple of people mention, and I hear it all the time. People say stuff is free because you can download it. That's not free. That's stealing something. Legally,
I would take issue with that. Stealing. It's copyright infringement. It's not stealing. But it's copyright infringement. It's illegal, but it's not stealing. And I agree with you. It's just the definition is not. It's not stealing.
Good point.
But it's not free.
Yeah, I think that's a really good point.
I would back up that it's not theft, though.
Yeah, I think we can all agree that stealing someone else's property, theft, is immoral. But I don't think copyright infringement, especially of a product that can be endlessly duplicated for free, essentially. I don't see how that can possibly fall into the same category as stealing someone's physical property that costs money, time, and resources, physical resources that had to be, you know, from the very basic the very basic materials involved had to be created from scratch and ultimately got to you in some, you know, shrink wrap package that you stuffed in your pocket. I don't see how information can be tossed into that exact same category. It's ridiculous.
Yeah, you can call it piracy if you like.
It doesn't mean it's right or wrong. It just means it's not stealing. It's copyright infringement.
Yeah, I think we can agree on that.
I still think it's illegal.
And copyright infringement,
sure.
The laws of copyright infringement are different, so it cannot possibly fall into a moral category. You know, because when we stop and think about what is, you know, morally correct, I mean, that in and of itself varies from culture to culture, but go ahead.
No, at least. It varies at least from culture to culture, usually from community to community and person to person, even so.
Generation to generation.
Yeah, so carry on, Les Mark. Sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt.
No, that's okay. I agree with Thistleweb. You know, it is copyright infringement because that is the law. You know, it doesn't mean it's right, and it doesn't mean that it's wrong. You know, it's just a state of legal, you know, I mean, we're taking it on faith that things that are against the law are bad. But as we all know, you know, these are times where things are gray. The right and wrong of things are not as clear as they once were to, say, my parents or their parents, especially. You know, in the United States, we're going through a time where I think, you know, for many decades now, our faith in lawmakers and the law and the government has been, you know, really challenged. But previous generations didn't have that. They might have disagreed with the people in charge, but they never thought of morally thieves, people who are letting down their constituents left and right, crooks, in other words. And as a result, by extension, every law that they support, we tend to think of, you know, we look at it askance, you know. And in this community, we're especially critical and hyper political. I mean, you go into the Microsoft area, nobody thinks about stuff. Nobody talks about this stuff.
You know, I wanted to bring this up earlier and didn't know how to work it into the conversation, but I think this is a pretty good time. I was listening to a podcast with a guy, the Joe Rogan podcast. If you don't know, Joe Rogan's a comedian, but he had Everlast on. If you don't remember him, he had a song called What It's Like, and he was also in House of Pain. And he actually said that, you know, he came out on attack of illegal downloading music. Okay, fair enough. But he also said if he could go back in time, he would erase the internet because he thinks, on the whole, the internet has had a wholly negative impact. And
on
it
his
just kind
life,
of
maybe
that's and we arrive at the point that I'm trying to make. It hasn't had a negative impact on his life. He's wrong.
Well, the only
he's wrong from the fact that in the token that, you know, his album would not have sold as many as he as was getting downloaded. Okay, people were exposed to his music and possibly went to a concert because of exposure to that MP3. The concept that because somebody downloaded a song that you've lost a sale is incorrect. Before now, I'm a recovered pirater. You know, I don't pirate software and I don't illegally download music, and I haven't in many, many years. But at one point I did, and I was on Windows, and the types of software that I was pirating wasn't going to be a sale if it wasn't available as an illegal download, okay? I was downloading Photoshop and Adobe Premiere and After Effects and stuff like that, but I couldn't afford those. So you wouldn't have made a sale in lieu of the piracy. You would have just lost somebody who was going to try to enter the market in learning how to use those software tools and get a job using them. So you would have lost a sale.
You know, the House of Pain thing, I couldn't let that go without saying Jump Around is a brilliant tune. Absolutely fucking brilliant tune. I so love that tune. That Jump Around is just so class. But yeah, on the wider thing and the lost sale
testing,
thing.
Testing.
You test it, came through, came through.
Hear you.
We can hear you.
Go ahead and test one.
Yeah, I was just going to say, you remember, about a year ago maybe, Adobe came out and said that around 80%, 4/5 of their sales, they know to be illegal copies of Photoshop and whatever. And the point is, they can make a profit from the 1/5, the 20% of people who can't afford not to pay license fee. They can afford, they can make a profit from the graphics designers, from the various stores who it would cost them so much in PR to be labelled pirate that they would pay the license fee. That's how they can get away with charging $1,500 or whatever it is for a Photoshop license. That's how they can get away with it. And they can still make a profit out of that. 80% of their license, of their users, are quote-unquote pirates.
Well, I mean, how many people are in...
In my continuing hatred for...
Yeah, when you... well, we stuck on each other. They shore up that. I mean, the reason Photoshop is an industry standard isn't because it's the most amazing program that was ever written. It has a lot of features. You know, I'm not saying it doesn't, but other software didn't become a competitor because you could pirate Photoshop and just get them now. And if you could say eliminate all of Photoshop's piracy and everybody had to, in order to use it, buy a copy of Photoshop, Photoshop wouldn't exist. Another product would have come along that was cheaper and better.
Yeah, this is why when people argue that if Adobe released their stuff native Linux and they put their Photoshop and After Effects and various other programs into the repositories and made them available at whatever it is, $300 or whatever per application, they would automatically outdo the GIMP and Inkscape and whatever. Bollocks, absolute bollocks to that idea. I will refute that till the end of time. When you have something like the GIMP, I don't use the GIMP, downloading episodes of Meet the GIMP to try and learn, and, you know, one day I'll get around to doing that. But the thing is, if you've got Photoshop in the repositories of Ubuntu or Debian or Fedora, whatever it is, they have got to prove that they are $300 better than the GIMP. And they are not going to do that. Yes, they have filters. Yes, they have functions. Yes, they have some effects. But they are not $300 or $400 better. They are simply not. And they are not going to do that.
I don't think they necessarily have to prove that they're $300 better than anything. They just have to prove they're a stable enough company for some industry with lawyers to be able to rely on, which doesn't mean they rely on the software. It means that they rely on their ability to sue them and get money from them if something breaks.
Well, I think you're essentially getting right to the heart of the matter. You know, I hate to say it, but I think lawyers are at the heart of much of the problems we have in software today. It has nothing to do with the code. Okay, it has nothing to do with code. And honestly, it has very little to do with the law in and of itself, or what is right. Let me put it this way, what is right or wrong. It's got very little to do with that. The fact is we have people who want to hold on to a business model that cannot possibly function in the virtual world. It cannot function with ones and zeros, you know, because you cannot monetize something without, you know, something virtual without turning it into something that they're familiar with already, something that you can put a limit on. So that's where software, you know, patents come in, and that's where licenses come in. A license is, you know, I mean,
that's where
it comes
limited
in to say
downloads
that you,
from the library comes in.
They're attempting to limit something that is in and of its nature is unlimited.
Yep.
You know, it's attempting to put limits on something that cannot be limited in and of itself, you know? So, I mean, the point there, they're trying to put laws and legal bindings on things to try to give them artificial limits. And that will function properly in their business models. And that's why those things are, you know, I mean, we in this community see those things as archaic, an archaic mindset eventually. You know, I personally see this period of time in history as kind of a change, kind of a sea change in the way people will do things. We don't yet draw the line between virtual products and real products. And by virtual, I don't mean like, you know, crap you'd buy in Second Life or something like that. But I mean like things that can be replicated for free. You know, I can't replicate my car for free. And honestly, I wouldn't. The friggin' thing died on me today. But I can't do that, right? But I can replicate my operating system for free. Why should they be sold in the exact same manner? It's ridiculous.
But I would say the distortion of intellectual property doesn't just stop. I mean, I get that there's a line between digital and the real world, but it's been distorted long before that. I mean, copyright was never intended to last as long as it is. Patents were never designed to be applied to organisms and to software and to these kind of unprovable ideas. It's been distorted for a really long time. It's just now it's so distorted that it's crowding out everything else.
Well, the purpose of it was all the same. I mean, the examples you give are good ones, but they have the exact same function, and that is to extend a business model. Do you think that Walt Disney is ever going, you know, the Disney company is ever going to let any Mickey Mouse stuff fall into public domain?
Yes.
You know, they won't.
No, it's a joke. I'm kidding. I know they won't.
You know, they will fight it tooth and nail if they have to, you know, because the moment any of it falls into public domain, they feel they're going to lose revenue, you know. And the only thing that is going to change is a mindset, a sea change, the idea that they could make money doing things differently. Quite frankly, I don't think anyone has figured out exactly how to do it just yet, because no one is going to be like Jonathan Colton, you know. No, Disney isn't going to be like Jonathan Colton, where they go around working their ass off, you know, and making and pocketing the money individually. You're not going to see a CEO be doing that for Disney's sake. It can't happen.
Fuck Disney, because Jonathan Coulton is great. Everybody loves the guy. Everybody wants to support him. Scott Sigler, an author, is great. Everybody loves him, wants to support him. This is the new way of doing business. It's not going to be easy on most of us to get there, but this is the way it's supposed to work.
Now, that's the thing. Is it? Honestly, you know,
yes,
when we stop
yes,
and think
somebody,
about it, we hail it. No, listen to me. We hail this as being the most, you know, radical change in commerce and communication that the world has ever seen. I hail it as the potential for that. But honestly, the exception that proves the rule. And the rule is that the guys who have the money are the ones that are going to change the laws and try to change reality to make things work for them, you know?
Yeah, that's true. I'm not debating that point. I'm saying that guys who put out their content and make it available because it's freely copyable, and by free I just mean it doesn't cost you anything to copy it, because
no,
it's copyable that way, then you have to kind of work under the parameters and work under the assumption that your work is going to be copied from computer to computer, from person to person. So it's only right, in the very essence of doing work, it's only right that if you intend to be paid for your work, that you should be paid for your work. So when someone gives out their music or their book or their work for a fee, that fee should go directly to that person and the people involved in producing it and mastering it or whatever have you. So yes, I think it is the way that it's supposed to be. Now, as far as the lawyers getting involved and screwing everything up, no, that should not be. The fact that lawyers exist at all is an abortion of justice, and it's an aberration of mankind. It shouldn't happen. But what I mean by the way it should be is that people should be able to pay for what they want, and they should be able to pay the person who made it.
I think the more and more, actually, not just geeks, but regular people are coming to the realization, the obvious realization, that the middlemen are where all the money gets sapped up. If you want to buy an album and compensate the person, the creative mind that come up with these songs and the people who put their heart and soul into playing their instruments to create that music, that the record label, not to them. You know, people are realizing that. People, more and more people are realizing that. I think that's gradually taking the place. And I think the middlemen, who that's their source of income, is being the financiers behind movies, behind albums, behind books, TV shows, whatever it is, I think they're having problems, and they're the ones who are desperate to keep a hold over the middlemen control that comes through SOPA or PIPA or whatever else it is. They want to maintain their position between the artists, the people who create the art, create whatever it is, and the fans. Because the internet allows the fans and the artists to join themselves with bypassing the middlemen. And the middlemen just can't stand that, essentially.
Well, you know, you're right. I think you're absolutely right. And I think the thing is, the problem I think I see right now is that not everybody is a Scott Sigler. Not everybody is, you know, a J.C. Hutchins. These people that go out and shake their ass, who work.
Okay, there? Lost in Bronx, nope. We heard you say they shake their ass and work, and then you cut out.
Okay. I said was that they work hard, and not every author can do that. Okay? Not everybody can manage that. And I don't think we have something in place that allows people that all they want to do is create the content, not distribute it, to be able to distribute it without getting a middleman, a bureaucratic, bloated, you know, label of some sort, a label, a publishing company, whatever, some middleman to you know, steal the money out of their pockets.
I think we're getting close.
I have to say we're really close. I mean, a lot of us in this channel right now are producing artwork, and I feel like a lot of us are distributing it pretty well. I mean, I'm not making a living off of it, but
no. Well, that's the point.
They're making money on it.
I wanted to, you know, I don't know that this ties into a profound point, and I'm not going to make a prediction on where things are going or why, but you know, Louis C.K. is just released a stand-up DVD that normally he would have distributed through the normal channels. Instead, he released on his website without DRM on it. And he said normally he made he'd make like maybe $5,000 or $6,000 on the DVD, but hopefully it would get him booked for more live shows. And that's kind of the business model that currently exists for a comedian. There's not a lot of money in it. There's a lot of money in it for the distributor, but not for the comedian, but he gets exposure or whatever. So he thought, well, since I don't make any money, I'll release this on my website and, you know, I'll charge $5 or whatever. And I'm not going to put any DRM or whatever. You can just download it and watch it. And I know people are going to steal it. I wish they wouldn't, but you know, they're going to do that anyways. So I don't know, like I said, that there's a profound statement, but I'm saying that Louis C.K.
You cut out for me. I wanted to hear the punchline on that.
Where did I
awesome.
Cut out at?
He was, I'm not going to make any money off of this, but whatever, I'll put it on my website. And then it went silent.
Yeah. And so he ended up making a $750,000 in the first 3 weeks.
Lost in Bronx, dude, I'm so glad you're sober to keep track of these things. Is that, I knew they had cut out for me as
I'm
well.
Glad, I'm glad it's still early over here, because I won't be later.
You know, it cut out for me at the same time as you, and I was trying to think where it cut out from, and where and you just cut in. And it saved me the hassle, honestly, so I thank you.
But anyways, like I said, I don't know that that's...
You almost broke this web.
If there's any profound statement to say about that, is that here is an industry darling, a guy who's had four shows through, you know, if you know the story behind the show Louis that he does now on FX, is that he was going out to strike up a deal for a new sitcom, and they were offering him $1 million signing bonus to do the pilot for this sitcom, and he was kind of meh, didn't really want to do the sitcom, but he was out there and talking to him, and he gets a phone call from the CEO of FX Network, and he said, look, I've got the worst deal in the world for you, I hope you love it. He says, I can't offer you any money, but I want you to do a show on FX and you can do whatever you want. And he said, well, you know, it can't be no money, but what can you pay me? And he said, I can get you $10,000.
$10,000 for what kind of time frame?
Here's the story, right? So he goes, okay, so you want a pilot for $10,000? He goes, no, we want a season for $10,000. And Louis C.K. goes, yeah, I don't think that's going to happen. And he goes, now hear me out. He says, if this works, you know, you'll get to do whatever you want. Free reign. And so Louis C.K. says, okay, wire it to my bank account tonight. I want it wired to my bank account. And I'm doing this under the deal that whatever I send you is what goes out. Nobody edits it. Nobody talks about it. I'm not going to take notes. I'm not going to take feedback for this. You know, I'm doing it for nothing. I'm just going to send you a show. And he edits the show Louis on his MacBook Pro. You know, I'm not going to get into that. But, you know, he all on his own. And he sends it to, and it's amazing. And it's unedited.
Can I ask a question?
And, you know, it's 100% genuine. So there are people that are mainstream people that,
yeah, pipe
yeah,
man,
you're cutting in
and
out.
And these are awesome stories. I really want to hear them.
Yeah, yeah, since you're cutting in and out anyway.
Damn. Hokey HPR just disconnected. I see
wow.
it in
yeah.
the chat on the side.
Wow, oh, man.
He was, like, spanked by the internet.
Well, his recording's still going, and so is mine, so we're okay.
Yeah, yeah, we don't need
it. He's back on.
And there's that Hokey HPR.
Am I still cutting
in? Oh, hi.
All right, hold on. I got to save these files before I can hit record again. Hold on a second.
No, this kind of reminds me of the whole.
That's not holding on, Thistleweb.
I'm too drunk to understand that. Could you repeat that?
That was the best Colin bullshit
man.
I've heard in
it's
a while.
The lag.
Yeah, that's cool. I'm cool with the lag.
Oh shit! I'm rolling, guys.
Thistleweb has a lot of brain latency going on right now.
Yeah, you're telling me.
Tell us when we're recording, Pokey. I got something to say too.
I don't know when I cut out, so I don't know how much you missed.
You were like in and out, but I caught.
Okay, looks like we're recording.
The
now.
Gist of the story was pretty clear. We're up.
So I'm just going to wrap up real quick and just say that there's mainstream guys that are more that at the beginning of that he was motivated not by money but by creativity. He took on the show based on creativity, and then he put out this DVD and decided to release it out there. And the fans of his show and of him and his personality, instead of him making a couple thousand dollars on a DVD, he made almost $1 million cash in 3 weeks. You know, and that's there's big rewards out there for artists that take that kind of risk and circumvent all the bullshit and do something genuine and honest.
Well, at the risk awesome. Of being a hypocrite, I have to agree with you because do you know Amanda Palmer? She's one half of the duo the Dresden Dolls, and they've had a you know that it's a two-person band, and they've been going on for years and years, and they have quite a following. And during some downtime, she decided to, and you know, I don't know who their label was, but it was a standard label deal. And she lost money on her solo album, and she was like incredibly pissed about this because they sold it like sold the ass off thing. It was insane how well this thing sold, and she didn't get you know she like actually had to pay the studio or the back, and she got really really pissed about this and decided, as far as I know at any rate, she decided that they were going to go indie on you know from that point on. But the point is one. One night she was on Twitter and she said, come to my website because, you know, no, she, in fact, I take this back. She did it all through Twitter. She decided she was going to auction crap off from her house. She was home. She was like half toasted, you know, from wine. And she's sitting there and she's like, I got stuff around my house and I got fans and like thousands of people follow me on Twitter. I'm going to start selling stuff. In 4 hours, she made something like $12,000 just selling crap out of her house. Right.
$12,000, you say.
And yet she had to cut a check
late.
So late.
I like where this is going.
Yeah, sounds like we're about to buy some Thistleweb gear.
Thistleweb just heard his business model. Get drunk and sell some of his stuff.
On you go.
I wish Peter 64 was on here. I'd love to hear what he was going to sell, like burned helicopters and towers and things.
Sorry, dude. On you go. I was just making a joke.
I enjoyed the joke.
I was hawking and I missed it, so I'm going to have to listen to the recording of this to catch it.
He
his
just
joke
said,
was that he's drunk and he's getting ready to sell his stuff is what he was hinting at.
You were telling your story and he goes, half toasted and selling stuff on Twitter?
And making 12 grand? Yeah, he was about to, you were about to sell him on the whole idea. But yeah,
the point is it was her fan base that supported her, you know. It was, you know, that allowed her express her creativity, just take advantage of her brand, you know. Now that was a brand that up until that realization, that was a brand primarily owned by the label. They
okay.
were the ones that marketed it.
All right, now I have to ask the question, and again, this is me running the risk of being hypocritical here, but if users connecting directly with the people who supply art and media, supporting these people directly, if this is the business model that we're supposed to have, if this is what works, and because it's certainly working now for some people, and assuming that it takes off and does work, is it sustainable? Can we keep this up, or is the next generation of people going to be so used to getting their stuff without paying for it that they're not going to bother to even think about it?
I think it's sustainable. I mean, I think look at the free software model that already exists. It's been sustained for quite some time. I think this could work in the long run. It's just, you know, some artists might have to accept that they're not going to be able to do their art full time, like, you know, multi-million marketing campaigns allows them to do. But I don't think a true artist is going to care about that so much. So I think it's sustainable. There might be some changes.
I don't think that the free software movement is a good example of that, because largely it's financial. Supported by corporations who are making money off of it. I'm talking about art where it's going to be bought directly by the end user.
The short answer is yes. I think it's definitely sustainable because, I mean, the Amanda Palmer is just a small drop in the bucket. On a larger scale, you have somebody like Prince who did his CDs in the I don't remember what Sunday paper it was over in London, but you know, he made a couple million off of that alone, and even then on his website he streams his music and people pay for that, and it's something to the tune of 70,000 a month. Now granted, he's established, but the fact of the matter is I think that the more of these bands, savvy bands, not stupid ones, and bands that are really good and know what they're doing, they will always find a way to get their music out there. And to tell you the truth, I mean, in terms of the music that I listen to, you know, it's funny because one of the mediums that I used in order to decide whether or not I was going to buy an album or anything was one of two ways. If I heard it on a radio, usually college radio station, I liked it, I would buy it. The other way is like we used to do in the old days. We had cassette tapes, we made mixtapes and sent it out to everybody. And, you know, that's basically how Metallica grew their fan base. The hypocritical bastards they are.
Yeah, right.
I think what's going on right now is we're creating an artistic middle class that hasn't existed. Especially, yeah. I mean, I can only speak now between the musician side of it. I can't, you know, I'm not talking to art, you know, painters and, you know, designers and stuff like that. But from a music perspective, in the old days, there was either you were the road musician who worked his butt off and made nothing. And that's, you know, I mentioned Danny Gatton earlier. He ended up killing himself because he was that guy. He worked his tail off. You know, he did all right, but, you know, and then there was the mega rich. So there was the struggling, poor, starving musician. And then there's the guy who gets a record deal, it makes big, you know, and then there's the guys who watch out, you know, they get a record deal, album doesn't do too well, and they're flipping burgers, right? I think what's going on right now is there's enough of that that maybe you won't have the next Pink Floyd or Led Zeppelin or Beatles or huge mega U2s, you know, those Aerosmith, those kind of bands. What you'll get is guys who make a decent living and do what they do. And
yeah,
they don't...
But that's not even what I'm talking about. It's not really at all what my question is, because I agree that it is working now. And I don't think that an established band has any particular advantage in this realm, given any amount of time, because people are becoming established through this business model. I mean, and I get it. It's working now. People are paying for what they like and supporting the artists that are making it. But in 20 years, are your neighbor's kids going to pay for music? Are your neighbor's kids going to pay for art that they can download? That's my real question, is about sustainability.
I think you're underestimating people's comprehension of the need to eat and survive. I think people know, yes, if you like an artwork, if you like someone's music, you got to tip them at some point. And if enough people tip this person, then they're going to be able to make more and more music without having to get a day job or whatever. I think it is sustainable. I don't think everyone just thinks that music and musicians grow on trees. I people understand that. And even if they get an album for free, at some point when they're able and they know, okay, this is a donation-based system, I need to start pulling my own weight, then they'll give money. I mean, that's how it is. I know you say you think free software is a bad example. I think it's a good example. I think it's working. People who can't pay don't. People who do, they do. And that's how it works. And even some art is already funded like that, even like museums and things like that. I mean, yeah, you've got the super rich people financing it on the behind the scenes, and you got normal people giving a little bit of money here and there. It's going to level out.
I think, yeah. Honestly, I think that I don't think that no artist can live on tips. Honestly, I don't believe that. Somebody, going back to Jonathan Coulton, you know, his music free to copy, and people do buy his albums. And I suspect because he's popular, he makes a fair amount of money off of his album downloads. But the fact is, before he got to be anybody who's very, I mean, arguably he is the superstar of the geek, you know, free, you know, sort of free culture movement. But the fact is, it is touring where these guys make their money, the real money, yep. Most of them, you know?
Yeah.
And the fact, you know, maybe you got to pay a cover to get in, and he's made a deal with, you know, whatever venue he's working in. I don't know exactly how that works. And he's selling albums right there. You know, he's selling CDs, you know, right there. But that's primarily where a lot, you know, again, he may be atypical, but a lot, you know, most of these guys who are trying to follow this model, they're only going to be able to make their money by constantly producing it, you know? And not every artist can distribute their art in that way. You know, you could try to be a sculptor and freely distribute your work.
Sure.
All you can distribute are copies of it. You know, like, you know, pictures of it.
Yeah, but those people aren't
the sculptor
being
itself. That's a slightly different thing, though. But I take your point.
I don't want to get sidetracked, but there, you know, a 3D printer might enable a sculptor to do that. But there was another point.
That's a really good point.
There was another point that I wanted to make, and that's that Jonathan Coulton was actually on Planet Money this year and released his financial records to Planet Money. And they said on the podcast what he made.
Do you remember how it broke down?
He's not super rich. I'd be willing to bet Lawson Bronx is pretty close with saying he's the middle class artist.
Okay, throw out some numbers. What do you think he made this year?
What would I guess? This year?
Mm-hmm.
I would say probably less than 3 years ago.
I'd say 25 grand.
No, I would say 200,000 to 300,000.
500,000.
Oh, no way.
550,000.
That much, really?
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, that's
again,
good for him.
Now, again, though, he is the big guy. You know, he is, right. You know, he is the star. Now,
he's not,
you know,
the middle class. That's what I'm saying. There is a middle class in there.
There is a middle
class. No. Well, I got to stop you there. That's that 500 grand for a guy who's been working his whole life. If you average that out over the time that he spent literally being a code monkey and touring and working his ass off for music, that averages out to about middle class. He can't.
No. We're all working our ass up. We are all the code monkey.
Yeah.
Yes.
All of us. And we're not making that kind of money. You know, so that what does that make him? Him middle class and we're nothing? You know, we're peasants?
Because he makes that in 1 year doesn't move him magically out of the middle class. If he's smart, he's going to squirrel that away for tougher times because that's what you do.
Well, that's the same with anybody who's, I mean, you know, you could look at any big music star right now who's making millions and millions of dollars, but you know that we know what pop music is like, and in a couple of years, a year or two, when they're not so cute anymore and their music is out of fashion, these guys aren't going to be making any of that money, and like anybody else, they got to squirrel it away. But you know, what does that make him? Well, I mean, when we're talking about this category,
my point is he's a 500 grand year is a cash windfall. It's not
so you don't think it's sustainable. You don't think
before the argument goes,
I'm not saying that he can't. I'm saying
Before the argument goes too much further, okay? I just want to raise the point that Jonathan Coulton has said in the past that as soon as he quit coding and started making music, he's made more money making music every year than he did making code. So I just want to point that out before this argument keeps going. He's always made more money.
We're not arguing.
Yeah,
as soon as he did it full time, he was making more money with music than the year he did the thing a week. He made more money that year than he did the previous year. So he's every year he's made more money.
And I'm glad he has. He's a good man. He makes good music, and frankly, he's earned that money. I would never say that he didn't earn it. I'm just saying that I don't think what he's done is signed up for a salary. He's still an artist, and I don't think a smart person in his position would take it for granted that 500 grand is coming every year. And I just don't think that moves you into
But what artist could? I mean, even if you have a big record deal, there's nobody who's guaranteed.
Oh, no. If you land
go
a
ahead.
Windfall of tens of millions, I'm sorry, Lawson, I didn't mean to jump on
No,
you.
No, go ahead.
But if you land a windfall of cash, 10 million, 20 million, you stick that in the bank and don't ever touch it and live off the interest, now you're making 500 grand a year for the rest of your life.
But there's less than 1,000 artists in the history of mankind that have ever done that.
You could say that about any line of work. I mean, you could be a CEO of the biggest corporation in the world, you get cancer next year, and all you have is what you put aside and maybe, you know, any bonuses you negotiated. But that's in the past. You can't count on what your next contract's going to be.
I totally agree.
See, all of this comes down to the back catalogue as well. So if you're, I don't know, if you're a band like Queen, by the time you get to like 1980, you've had six or seven albums out there that are constantly, when you release a new album, want to go out and buy the earlier stuff. It's a new lease of life on the earlier stuff. So it gives a boost of life to what's already out there. So all of this, all the big label stuff is like that. They rely on the new album reintroducing new sales of the older stuff, which breaks into that. So you've constantly got stuff that you did 7 or 8 years ago, 9 years ago, 10 years ago, constantly making a little bit extra and a little bit extra and a little bit extra, adding to the total.
Well, you got to understand too that art is radically different than, say, software, you know, or the software model, in that, or other things that are essentially transient. You know, as important as they may be at the moment, they are essentially transient, because, you know, who is going to pay for, you know, a copy of Red Hat from, you know, 5, 6, 7 years ago? Who's going to pay cash money for that, right? People are still buying Elvis Presley albums.
I think there's something physical in art that connects with people, because if something like a painter was specifically tied to what they produce only, you know, the internet was way more capable of displaying an image of a piece of art than it was an MP3 of a piece of art. The difference is that the business model for a painter wasn't that he was selling these overinflated, ridiculous albums with all this ridiculous crap tied to it, that the really in the end, they were kind of screwing their consumers. But painters, as a net, you don't hear about how much they lament the internet, because they're people who buy their stuff want the physical painting on their wall. The original is the important part. A print might be the important part. And a picture on the wall hasn't been replaced by, you know, people aren't buying digital picture frames so they can display Picasso. You know, I think there's a business model in there. And I think vinyl, oddly enough, vinyl sales keep going up every year. It's the only form of media in music entertainment that keeps going up. And it's kind of like an art form. I mean, it's something people want, a physical copy, but people were never emotionally attached to a CD. And a CD is kind of essentially the same as the download. And to them, they don't make that connection. But people have a an emotional connection to a piece of vinyl. And, it, you know, there's more money to be made from a true fan than just the sale itself for the music. You know what I mean?
Yeah, absolutely. That kind of goes back.
Go ahead, Clint.
Okay, that goes back to what I was saying like hours ago now. You know, I mean, it's not the content alone anymore. It's the content plus the artist, and people will pay for that package deal, just like they're paying for free software package deal, where they know that they can access that programmer and say, look, I love it, but you need to move this button over here, and they'll do it. And that's why people are paying, and that's why people are going to pay for independent art, because they know that they can get to that person, they can get their merchandise, they can meet them at the show, stuff like that. That there's an appeal there. And the only other way to sell really to people is to ram $1 million of marketing down their throats. And I'm hoping that phase is dead now. People aren't listening as much to the marketing, and people will start listening more to the art and the artist.
See, that phase is not dead, and your next presidential election will prove it.
I've said this before. I said it on your show, Plateau. I don't think that mass market media is going anywhere. I think what the internet has brought and what the small artist has brought is in addition to what already exists. I don't think it's going to replace it.
Fair
enough.
Yeah, there's some
enough. You know, would Jonathan Coulton have ever gotten a big, you know, record deal in the old days? You know, and by old days, no. I mean maybe even only 10 years ago, 15 years ago. Would he ever have gotten the deal? And if he didn't get the deal, he wouldn't have gotten the exposure, right? And he wouldn't have gotten the tours signed up for him instead of him going out and doing the work himself. And that means no exposure, right? And that means fan base, you know? Those guys are going to do it. Those guys are going to take the reins and do it on their own. But there are, for every John Colton, there's 100 out there who don't want anything to do with that end of it, you know? And those are the guys that the labels are still going to go after.
Sure.
See, I wonder, actually, if people like Jonathan Coulton are the exception rather than the norm, and the fact that they can genuinely, and the fans, the people who listen, actually agree and categorize them as art. Because, I mean, you look at major studio releases of movies, the major mainstream album releases, band releases, they're all mainstream. They're all designed as industry, as product. And I think fans are gradually realizing that that's not the same thing as art, that product is not necessarily art, that a movie is not necessarily art. It's there to tick various boxes. I mean, I like was their action. They're not art. There's no way in hell I would consider them art. There's nothing artistic about them. But they're action-packed. There's a difference. And I think more and more people are realising the difference between studio-produced, the mass-produced, mainstream-produced, elite-produced, studio-produced product and art. And I think art is what individuals come to a product, produce a product that has something to say. They might not agree with what it has to say, but it's something a bit unusual, a bit different, rather than just ticking the boxes.
The average person is not that savvy, I'll tell you that.
I kind of wanted to respond to what Lost and Bronx said and say that I disagree in the fact that I don't think it's going to amend. I think it will for a while, but I think the internet is going to swallow major media companies like it did newspapers. I think right now the music industry and the most of the entertainment industry sits right now where newspapers did 10 years ago, and that in another 10 years it's going to be a vastly different landscape. And I pay pretty close attention to the business models of these small independent artists. One example I want to give you is really recently, and that's with a podcast, something we can all relate to, and that is the Tell 'Em Steve Dave podcast. If you don't know who Tell 'Em Steve Dave is, if you're into Kevin Smith movies, it's a guy, Walt Flanagan and Brian Johnson, and they were best friends with Kevin Smith when he was in high school. And they've been in all of his Viewisk Universe movies. You know, the one guy is the fanboy, and he says, you know, he yells something snarly at somebody, and the other, and Walt Flanagan says, "Tell him, Steve Dave." Okay, and they have a podcast, and it's a pretty popular podcast, much more popular than anything we're doing. But one of them got the idea to release.
I like that.
What's that?
I said I like this one better.
I like that podcast a lot, and I think they're good guys. One of them got the idea to release a podcast on vinyl. Okay. Wow, the other guys were like, this is ridiculous. There's no way. Nobody cares. Nobody cares about vinyl. That it's dead. And so the guy said, okay, a couple thousand dollars, would you guys? Yeah, if we could get a couple thousand dollars. So they decided, how are they going to do it? And they did a Kickstarter campaign. Okay. And they said, if we can get 2,000, this will be a limited print, just something really special for the really good fans to have. And we'll see if there's any interest. And if we can get the Kickstarter going, we'll do it. And the Kickstarter closed in 2 days with $12,000.
Yeah, but I mean, come on. They had a massive fan base to begin with. And, you know, maybe they don't make a lot of money off their podcast, but you know, that's a matter of shaping their brand, you know, and their products, so to speak, you know, to make money off of that. The fact is, none of us could do that. There isn't anybody here in this chat right now that could pull that off.
I don't think that they were massive to begin with. I'll argue that point with you. I think by its very nature, it being a podcast, they started off small and grew an audience. And you may be correct that none of us could do it, but maybe that's just because we're not hilariously, brilliantly funny people.
Yeah, the whole Kevin Smith gang with the various people that have got on, like Brian and you know, the whole Tell 'Em Steve Dave, the whole cast. I mean, these guys are really funny as it is. So that's a bit unusual. These guys have got a natural talent. These people are naturally funny. Smodcast is fucking hilarious. If people have not, if they don't have Smodcast with Kevin Smith and Scott Mosier on their list, honestly, get subscribed to that RSS feed. It's fucking hilarious. And these guys are mates of theirs. They've appeared on Smodcast from time to time, and they are brilliant as well. These guys have already got a built-in audience. But the thing is, these people already have an audience, and I've lost my train of thought here, so I'm just going to cut off the mic.
Well, my point is that, yeah, maybe they have a big audience, but, you know, they would not have existed in an old paradigm. There would have been
maybe they wouldn't have existed on their own, but they still would have been, you know, Kevin Smith toadies. They still would have been his hangers on, and they would have found some other way to market that fact. You know, they may be very, very funny on their own, but I'll tell you this, there is no shortage of talent. There's no shortage of humor out there. You know, the funniest people I have ever known, and I mean, funny to the bone, the funniest people I ever knew never made a dime off of comedy. You know, they're just regular people who happen to be funny. And the fact is, yeah, and people who have a great voice, you know, people who have maybe a great singing talent, and the only place they ever sing might be in church, right? There's talent out there by the bucket load. But what we don't have is an easy way for these people to market their talent.
We do know. I mean, that's my argument against that. We do.
I mean, if I'm a writer and I got to, I'll tell you this, if I'm a writer and I got to go, you know, pricing print and I got to get all the books sent to my house and then I got to pack them all up and I got to send them all out by UPS, I got to tell you, I am never going to write a freaking book. But that's exactly what Scott Sigler does.
It's not the actual creation of the app. It's the getting it up to the people, and that is exactly
the point. This web has hit it right on the net, right on the head.
That is where. You're a drunk man. You're telling me.
An altered state of mind has proven, you know.
Oh no, guys, trust me. I don't know if anyone follows me in Identica. I mentioned something about an ideal project and just the ideal domain name popping up at the right time. But this is part of this. It will be revealed at a following date. But the idea is that sometimes things just join up. And the thing is, with self-promotion or self-creation, whether it's podcasts, whether it's music, whether it's anything else, is the one thing that the major networks have, the traditional outlooks have, whether it's movie distributors, book distributors, album distributors, the one thing they have is they have all of the distributors lined up. So if you're an artist signed to a major label, you're going to get your ass on MTV. You're going to get your ass on any other music network that they're a part of. Radio stations, they're going to get your song played on all their networks. If you're not signed up to their artists, to their agreement to cut them in on the deal, there's no way in hell you're going to get on MTV. There's no way in hell you're going to get onto their distribution networks, on their radio stations. The same thing with books, with movies. If you create an independent movie, it doesn't matter how good it is. It doesn't matter how bizarre it is, how cool it is.
Keep in mind, Thistleweb, you're talking about two vastly different paradigms where what the internet has done has created a world where consumers can pay creators for their content. That's all it boils down to. You're talking about MTV, you're talking about major motion picture houses. That has nothing to do with you wanting to get art or production from those people.
Yeah.
That has to do with you being a product. That you are a product, and they are selling you to advertisers. And the content they put on those networks is not a distribution network with you in mind, other than that's the bait, and they're there to lure you in so they can sell you to advertisers. These are two vastly different paradigms. They can not work.
Yeah, up to a point. I agree with you. But up to a point. The point is that if you are part of the old boys network, you're going to be promoted as one of them. If you're not part of that network, you're not going to get that chance. You're absolutely not going to get that chance.
I agree. For their network, you're going to get paid a lot to be the bait that lures in the viewer or the listener or whatever medium we're talking about. You're going to get paid a lot to be that bait. What I'm saying is the internet is a different paradigm completely.
First off, there's never been any guarantee just because you got signed to a label that you were going to make millions and millions of dollars. You know, if your stuff doesn't sell, they dump you faster than day old fish. You know, you stink to them and they don't want anything to do with you if they can't make a dime off of you.
Isn't the percentage of people that get signed to labels something like 15% to 20% that actually make it?
To refer to another Planet Money, the fact is they were saying that it's something like 90% of all albums lose money, and it's always been that way.
I was just going to say I'd be surprised if it was as much as 15 to 20.
I think it's 90% of albums lose money overall. But those 10% pay for the rest.
Maybe about 20 years ago, this stuck in my brain. I was watching television, and I don't know, it was like Entertainment Tonight or some garbage, and they had Kenny Rogers of all people on there, right? And I remember a comment he made. He said that, you know, the host, you know, made some ridiculous comment about, oh geez, you're always working. I mean, you're touring something like 250 days out of the year. It's just, you know, why do you keep working like that? You've been so popular. And he said, you don't make any money if you don't tour. You know, if you look at the statistics, every city you go to where you are touring, your album sales spike. And when you leave, the album sales drop. And that is where the money is, you know, in touring. Now, of course, he was a studio, you know, he was a label guy, right? So the money he was really making was for the label. And then, you know, he was sucking off of that tea. But if he was on his own, if he was an independent guy, you know, and you know, who cares, you know, who we're really talking about, not necessarily Kenny Rogers, but any artist, you're independent artist, that is where your money is going to be, in pressing the flesh, in people seeing you and then being part of that experience. And then people can trade and give your stuff away. The fact is, you're giving away his music to support him, right? So he's making good money off. But the fact is, it is the Jonathan Colton, you know, mystique that people want to buy into. I mean, you cannot freaking get a space at Comic-Con when that guy is appearing over in San Diego. You can't get in there. And they can fit like something like 5,000-7,000 people into that room. And it's SRO, you know? He could sell out a huge stadium at this point.
So, yeah. So regardless of the distributor there, what you're saying is the guys have to give their music away. It's just whether or not you prefer to give it to one of the content houses or whether you want to give it to an ISP and let people download it for free. If the money's in touring, then it's the same business model anyway.
I would take one issue with the fact that touring, by and large, pays for the most of what artists make. But the money that's made for touring, by and large, doesn't go to the artist. So no, they make good money touring, but, well, not only that. I'm not talking about those kind of guys. I'm talking the guys in a van going and booking shows and stuff like that. They make decent money from the venue, but the venue and Ticketmaster together and the promoters and all that make huge amounts of money on top of that. It's not a pure form either. When you go see them live, you're still paying a pretty small percentage to the artist. The one holdout that an artist has is merchandise.
So that,
it's always been true that if you buy a sticker from your favorite artist, you will give him more money in his pocket than any of the albums or live shows you get. You a sticker alone will make him more money than anything else you buy.
And we gave those damn things away? Shit.
Yeah, this reminds me of the whole concept of royalty, or is where entitlement is where in the olden days in Britain especially, where some individual would help out Prince whatever his face with some sort of problem, and the Prince would reward them by giving him or making him Lord such and such, and the title would pass down from son to son to son to son, and generations on they would still be reaping the rewards from that one act. This is the same sort of thing. It's the thing that people are signed up and, you know, they feel entitled to reap the rewards from stuff that was in the 1940s, the 1950s. The same idea. It's the exact same idea where the modern thing is you work for your living, you keep gigging, you keep playing, you tour, you keep producing new stuff. That's how you make a living, essentially.
Absolutely agree with you on that one. Celebrityism is definitely the modern nobility.
No, I would argue that it isn't celebrity. It is product based on, you know, a sold brand or marketing tool, such as Mickey Mouse. Let's go back to Disney. You know, that what Thistle Web said is an exact perfect example of what Disney's trying to do. They want entitlement forever for their little lord, Mickey Mouse. You know, they want that thing to pay off forever. They want, you know, generations of people to grow up understanding that they can, you know, that this is Disney and that's part of the Disney market. They don't want somebody else taking a Disney image and start making money off of it and maybe breaking the concentration or breaking the focus away from Disney, saying, oh, I can get Mickey Mouse content from somebody else.
Yeah, yeah.
See, what annoys me, especially with the music industry, but I mean, I suppose the movie industry as well, is they keep, to try and justify all of this, is they keep saying it's art. It's somehow it's artful to make new stuff, and that art must exist, and that people should pay for art, and whatever. That's bollocks. That's absolute bollocks to me.
Yeah, tell that to the man who made the cave painting 2 million years ago.
Because, I mean, look at it now. All you've got now is a vast majority of, I mean, talking about production movies rather than independents, it's all remakes, it's all sequels, prequels, it's all stuff that's based on existing franchises. And even then, they don't even pay people who are creative. I mean, you remember a story about the dude that played Darth Vader in Return of the Jedi? Even now, when he gets his royalty checks, they say, oh, sorry about that, we might be the sixth most profitable movie of all time. but we're still not making a profit, so we can't pay you a bean. Sorry about that. Maybe next year. You know, it's bollocks. Absolute bollocks. I mean, all they do is remake stuff. All they do is franchise stuff.
Percentages of so-called movie profits, that is the oldest scam in Hollywood. That's been going on for decades and decades. I mean, that went back on during the, you know, the golden days, you know, where a big, you know, a big movie star would sign, you know, get a very small salary or a very small fee for the act, but get a nice percentage of the profits. And then on paper, they can prove that it never made a dime. You know, it just never made any money whatsoever, and they've been doing that forever. And I don't think Hollywood is the only place where that happens by any means. I'm sure the record labels do this, the exact same thing.
But I wanted to get a bit back to the original point that I do think that there is money, and I do think it's sustainable kind of full-time living for artists that will be ongoing. I think there's going to be a nice equilibrium where discovery services will be much more word of mouth through things like Twitter or Google Plus and Facebook, and people will discover cool things, and people who are doing good things will get recognized and get paid. And if you want to look more into like some of the more like businessy kind of facts and figures, look into things like the long tail is a big yeah, thing yeah. to look up. But not only that, I think what really offsets the long tail is reading a book like Everything You Ever Wanted to Know About the Music Business. It's a book that's probably available at your local library. That in and of itself will give a better perspective for musicians to know why things are the way they are in the music industry and where actual money flows and why. And, you know, and in there you can see that there is a niche, that there is a upper middle class lifestyle that will be available to people, to artists, that maybe 20% of them would have made millions of dollars and will only make $100,000 or $200,000 a year. And maybe 20% of those would have never even been in the music industry at all. And then there's the working class that would have made $40,000 or $50,000 that might be able to elevate to $100,000. And we won't see the mega million artists in the quantity that we have over the years.
That'd be great.
I'm speaking from as a person who has actively researched and studied and worked really hard on learning about what it would take to have a successful independent album. So.
Don't.
I'm not saying I'm an expert, but you know, I'm
buying what you're selling. I agree.
I've done a lot of research.
I can tell.
And don't take me for a guy who doesn't think that what you're saying is true. I hope to God you're right. I'm just a pessimist. Nothing ever goes.
Well, I mean, under this paradigm, something like an '80s hair band could never come into existence because there is no talent there. Okay.
And I don't think there's a bad thing about that.
No. I'm just saying. I'm not shedding any tears. I'm just saying. That things can, you know, the type of music that we're going to be seeing in the future, we're not going to see anything like the Beatles again, that it becomes a cultural phenomenon. We'll, you know, under this, if this holds true, is what I'm saying, we'll only see things that will influence certain subcategories of consumers, you know, people who are, you know, they find their niche, and in that niche, they're going to have superstars, so people that we love, and maybe those superstars, because the niche is so small, are only making a comfortable living. They're not multi millionaires that are influencing our entire culture. Cultures around the world.
Hey, let me ask this. You're in Clubhouse here. Why are we basing
Unix?
Yeah, yeah.
Oh man.
Why are we basing success on how much somebody makes?
Right.
Especially us.
I think we're doing it because there are a lot of us here who are producing content that we're not getting paid for it. And if we had a choice, we'd like to make some money off of it. Now, I don't want to be a millionaire, right? But I wouldn't mind making a few dollars off of Eddie K. I can tell you that right now. It wouldn't hurt me at all. You know, I could certainly use it.
Do you think you're not a success because you're not making any money?
I'm saying I'm poor because I'm not making any money. Artistically, I think I'm doing fine. You know, I'm doing what I want to do artistically, but I'm not making any money off of it, and it still takes my time. The only thing that matters to any human being, and you can talk about money, and you can talk about your religion, and you can talk about anything. The only thing that matters to me, you, or anybody else on this earth is time, because that is the only thing you can never get back after you've spent it.
I think there's a difference here.
That's a good point.
Because I think there's a difference here is that with the executives, the people who are in charge of the recording industry, of the music industry, of all the various labels that we would recognize worldwide is they have a previous history of top 10 artists, whether it's Bowie or the Beatles or Elton John or whatever. And they hand them out as carrots. They want the next generation. They want to find the next Elton John, the next Elvis Presley, the next Beatles, the next Stones, the next Zeppelin, the next whatever the money-making thing is. They want to hand that out as the carrot on the stick to be the next thing. And I think those days are well and truly got out to say you could be this. It's like the National Lottery adverts. It could be you. It's not going to be you that buys the ticket for a dollar, a pound or whatever, and wins $5 million on the lottery. It could be you, but it's not going to be you. The point is, they keep holding that out as the incentive and the target as well. I mean, bear in mind, capitalism is supposed to be about the targets. You make more than you did last year. So if last year you had Elton John making X amount of millions, you're supposed to be a success, you're supposed to have something else that makes more than that the following year. And that's just not going to be the case. Times have changed, and that's just not going to be the case. Now, you can make a perfectly good living, but you're never going to be anywhere near classed as, quote, a success, unquote, by the big names.
And that couldn't happen too soon, because to tell you the truth, I think the music industry overall is stale, and I'm actually welcoming the potential for truly creative bands who strike out on their own, because this is going to give us a different take on things. And you're right, it's always been about the cookie cutter bands. Here's the next Rolling Stones, here's the next Kinks. Why can't they be their own identity? And that's what I really look for in music these days. And that's why I think that with a lot of the Creative Commons music that is out there now, I think that there's a lot of hope, and I can't wait for the large record companies to just finally die.
I would love another Kinks.
I wanted to respond to Lost in Bronx. Not respond, but say this as a point, okay? I love Eddie K. I love it. I really do. I have $10 that I want to give you. How do I do that?
Yeah, I echo that sentiment.
Yeah, do you have a donate button, Lost in Bronx? I was trying to ask. I don't know if you heard me try to ask it.
I think that's a no.
See, he's afraid of money. Be bought that's off. Why.
I hope he's not offended. I mean, I'm being honest.
He's scrambling to create a Flattr account right now and then put it on the webpage and then claim that it's been there all along. All right.
Well, in the vein of selfless promotion, you can PayPal me at pipemanmusic@gmail.com. I have a Flattr account. It's available on opensourcemusician.libsyn.com. And
okay.
I even have a Tip the Web account. So, but I do have, you know, I do want to support things that I think are cool. And, you know, we've talked a lot about what will other people do, okay? And I think it's reflected in what will we do. And
yeah.
I honestly do. I have $10 that I would like to give Lost in Bronx. I just want to know how I do that and how others who enjoy Eddie K would like to do that.
You know, I think the more that the internet grows, the more that artists and their fans realize they don't need the middleman. They can get together and they can support the people. They can go direct to the source and they can repay the source, and the source can respond directly to them. And I think that's a good thing. That really is a good thing. Unfortunately, the RIAA and the MPAA and other organisations like that feel freaked the fuck out by that whole concept, because they are the middleman and they can't exist. They don't exist if there's not both sides to rip off.
And the irony of it all is the money that they've taken from people in their lawsuits have not gotten one dime to any musician.
There's nothing ironic about that at all. We never expected them to get that money.
I saw actually a Richard Stallman speech, strangely enough, about that issue of, hey, I have money, I want to give it to you, how can I get it to you? And the premise, he really kind of went, into the artistic matters as well as the software matters, and saying, like, people need to to put on their sites and stuff like that, little buttons that say, hey, give me $1, give me $2, give me $10, whatever. Subscribe to me, give me $10 every month, whatever. There needs to be a direct to the artist or whatever method of supporting the things that we like. And I think that is a big game changer, actually.
Since we're obviously into the drinking portion of the show, I would like to raise my glass to Richard Stallman. I really do believe he's a great man. He's done great things for this art, and he's leaving it a better place than he found it for what he's done.
Yeah, I would echo that as well and say I don't agree with all of Richard Stallman, what he says and what he does. But yeah, on the whole, he is well worth raising a glass to. I would echo that.
Yeah, but at this point, you'd raise your glass to anything.
And your point is?
I guess I don't have one.
I wrote a blog post once that basically could be summed up in my opinion of Richard Stallman is that I don't agree with everything Richard Stallman says, but I'm very glad that a guy like him exists.
Yeah, I think that's, sorry, go ahead.
Yeah, I was going to say, a lot of what Richard Stallman says, I mean, sometimes he does say things that are a bit divisive, but on the whole, he is totally on the money. He really is. Hats off to the guy. He really is. And the thing is, a lot of people walk the walk, or talk the talk, but they don't walk the walk. I can fully believe he walks the walk. He lives what he says. A lot of people, there's very, very few people on this planet you could say that about. He really does walk, he lives what he preaches.
Yeah, that's exactly what I was going to say at this web. Yep. I mean, I think it's important and really, yeah, just important that there is a person walking the walk to represent that, yes, this is something that he believes in. I mean, that's a powerful statement. And even if we come close to that kind of dedication, then we're probably doing all right.
It's no small thing either. Lots and lots of people claim to walk the walk and don't realize when they don't. And I think RMS is, he's very aware that he's walking the walk, and he does it intentionally. And he's setting a great example. I mean, foot eating be damned. He's a great man.
Yeah.
Yeah, one of the things when you say about free software, I mean, I don't run a free software distribution. I run Crunchbang, I run Mint. Well, I used to run Mint, which is as far from, I mean, you never see RMS running Linux Mint because it comes with Java and it comes with Flash and whatever. And I mean, I install these regardless of what I run. I install things like Flash and that anyway, MP3 anyway. RMS would never do that. He would just, there's no way in hell he would ever do that. So he would never run the type of distribution that I would run. But the point is, he does actually do what he says he does, and that really does speak volumes. I mean, when you're talking about things like, well, I can do without Flash, that means I do without YouTube, which means when I'm bored, for me, what it means when I'm bored and I'm thinking, oh, a tune comes to mind that I've not thought about for 20 years, like, oh, I could listen to that, I'll just go on to YouTube and check it there. Well, RMS couldn't do that because he doesn't have Flash. So it's things like that. I mean, the norm of today's internet life involves some sort of proprietary stuff, whether it's graphics cards, sound cards, wireless cards, or even Flash. He willingly does without that because of his principle, and you've really got to admire that. I mean, for all everything else, you've got to admire that.
I know what I don't want, and that's what I had with Windows before I found Linux. And I know what I really deep down want, and that's what Richard Stallman's vision is. The problem is, I'm not the kind of guy that's going to do what it takes to be a Richard Stallman. So I'm grateful that Richard Stallman exists because he moves the ball closer to the end zone for me.
He really does. Wow, what a profound point. Well done.
Just curious, has anybody mentioned BSD in the last couple hours?
I mentioned Unix earlier.
Yeah, Unix. I hear you, but you know that covers a proprietary connotation. But BSDs in particular.
Hey, Red, nope. Can I before we change the subject? Can I get to one more point? I've been dying
of course.
To ask. We will definitely come back to Unix, and you will have center stage because we need that. But I want to ask as far as. I don't want to say supporting the creators that you're a fan of, but at least insofar as compensating them. Do you think that what we're doing here today, putting out a podcast, putting out shows the way that we do, is that any kind of compensation to the culture that we're trying to support? Because I, for one, can't do it financially.
See, you could argue that the more attention you draw to a particular project. I mean, on Crivens, I was singing the praises of UM Player as a movie player. And funnily enough, after I was singing the praises of UM Player, I got so pissed off with it, with the bugs that are in it, that I moved to VLC, which I never thought I would do. But the point is, if for example, I was really popular and a lot of people heard the word that I was putting out, that UM Player's fantastic, and it drew a lot of people to UM Player, then what does that mean? You know, it doesn't really benefit them in any way. It costs them more bandwidth to download the to allow people to download the software. It produces more bug reports for them, which, well, in theory, makes them better because they can address that. It draws more reviews, which could be negative because of the bugs that are in it. It causes a lot more things than maybe, possibly, than it's worth. I mean, that's maybe a bad example, but you know what I mean.
Sorry, I was just going to say, I think, you know, Pokey, as you say, that is the whole point of HPR, isn't it? I mean, you know, we all benefit from the shows, and so everyone, in theory, contributes as well, and, you know, therefore produces, you know, content themselves, making the whole cycle continue. And on a larger scale, I think that's also, you know, I would say that, yeah, doing something, if you're putting something out there, you know, one could argue that it could work on a much larger scale, in that, yeah, musicians have content to listen to because they've got to get entertainment from somewhere too, and they might listen to podcasts or whatever. So it's a big circle, I think.
I think there's
if I had
lot...
somebody sick, or else I wouldn't be able to sleep at night anymore.
I think there's a lot more ways to contribute to the whole concept than just money as well. I mean, we're just concentrating on financial. There's a lot more ways in terms of code and documentation and artwork and even helping out in forums, that type of thing, and even spreading the word. You know, there's a lot more ways than just financial.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, that's part of the ecosystem that we're trying to create, a participatory culture rather than a consumer culture where all you do is buy, consume, you don't understand anything that you're doing, but you're there with the money to throw at the issue every moment. And when something goes wrong, you got more money, hopefully, to throw so that someone can come fix it for you. You know, that's just so blatantly mind-numbed, whereas something where people are contributing to something, whether it's monetarily or their artistic talent or their programming code, that's powerful and that's different.
Well, I mean, if you're talking about other things other than financial, you're actually growing the product as well. If you're creating tutorials on how to use something, you're making that product more valuable because people are looking at that and going, right, I can download this, but I might not know how to run it, how to use it in such and such a way. You're adding that extra layer into the project, so you're increasing the value of the project, even although you've not spent a bean on the project.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, but realistically, I'm providing a distraction. I'm not putting out tutorials and how-tos for anybody.
I would say this: Linux podcasts, on the whole, probably win Linux more users than most of the effort that's put into. We are the marketing arm of Linux.
Oh man, okay. That's a great point.
Obligatory Chess Griffin mention here.
Well, yeah, but that's a great point.
But while some of us might not have the $10 to kick that project, a following and a voice to say, hey, look, it's the holidays. Not a lot of people have the money to kick to a project. I get that. But for those of you who do, if you were going to go buy another latte, just skip lattes for this week. Kick 10 bucks to your favorite open source project.
Wait a minute. I'm sorry. Did you say skip coffee this week?
Yeah, yeah. I don't like the sound of that. That doesn't.
Your beer or something. How
he
about
said,
that, pal?
No, Klaatu. He said skip buying it from Starbucks. Go make your own.
He didn't say Starbucks. I heard latte.
Right, skip buying your latte from Starbucks. Make a latte.
I didn't hear
at
Starbucks.
Home.
If you're saying
you've
Starbucks,
I've
penned my message.
You might cause a
don't
stampede.
Don't go to Starbucks.
Here.
Okay.
Don't give your money to an evil, stupid corporation.
Hear, hear.
For a week.
No, good point. I'm sorry, I derailed you, but yes, I mean
Starbucks supports SOPA. Well, the problem.
Or yeah, but alternatively, just steal the coffee.
There you
go. That's our media arm's attempt at FUD.
Just don't steal it from a fair trade.
That's our feeble attempt at FUD.
But I really like where you're going with that, Pipe Man, because and strangely, it literally never occurred to me that this is the case. But yeah, Linux podcasting, I mean, for the amount of effort that people are putting into Linux podcasts, especially like the positive ones and the stuff that, you know, that show that Linux users are cool and normal and they're producing stuff and they're excited about it and they're creative, you know, I mean, the amount of effort that goes into that, it's like a marketing branch. It's we don't have, you know, Linux, the concept doesn't have $1 million to put into a fancy advertising. But here's this great content that people are putting out. People are hearing about this other way of computing. They get excited about it, and they learn that they can get help to implement it, and then they start adopting Linux and BSD.
Right. I'm glad you say that what we're doing is getting out into the greater world, because sometimes it feels like we're just talking to each other, which is fine with me. I love talking to each other. I think, you know, everybody we're talking to is great people, but it's comforting in a way to know that it's getting out and doing some good for something that we all believe in.
I want to jump in right here. Speaking of getting stuff out, how do y'all get your stuff out other than just on your website?
Porn
where
helps.
Else do you go to get your stuff?
Porn helps.
Am I limited
lot,
to just
know?
Going to your
I
website?
I really thought I got to get. Oh, no, I'm sorry. I thought we were having a different conversation.
We were. Yeah, you guys talked to each other really bad, and I don't think either of you knew it. Cobra 2, can you repeat that so we can hear what you just said?
Oh, I'm sorry. I was just wondering, like, how do you get your content out to other people? Am I just limited to going to your website? Is there more than one place I can go and get it? Is there, like, a central location before I can just go and download Lost in Bronx's stuff, listen to an album from Guitar Man, or, you know, just read some book that somebody wrote?
There's always vivid.com where you can download the latest porn movie with the latest musical stylings in the background of gangbang whores, whatever. Yeah, another NSFW tag.
I think.
Thank you, Thistlewood, for pulling off my joke where I failed.
Klaatu does that for me all the time. Every time I tell a joke that fails, Klaatu picks it up and a month later tells it to raucous applause.
Yeah, but that's not. Yeah, that's not considered helping you. That's stealing your content, for which I apologize.
Means you have better timing.
It's a copyright infringement.
Yeah.
It's intellectual
right,
property
right.
problem.
Yeah.
No, Cobra 2, I have a question for you.
Is that directed?
To anybody?
I think
all right,
everyone.
We'll answer, Pokey.
Yeah, I think that's one of the things where, I mean, as much as the whole self-producing, the whole concept of self-production is absolutely fantastic. Is anyone could get on and write up an e-book, you know, create an album, create a documentary, create whatever it is, create music, whatever it is, they can do that. The thing they don't have is the distribution network. That is where the traditional industry have built all that up and sewn all that up, because people hear about new music through music channels. They hear about new music through the radio stations. They see new movies in the theatre. And the theatre don't do anything that's independent. All they do is stuff that comes from their own network. That's the distribution network is absolutely huge, and that's something that cannot be underestimated. You can do everything else. You can create as real good quality stuff as you want in your industry, but you don't have the distribution network, because the way that they get people interested in any new stuff, they have the traditional industries have that entirely sewn up.
Well, actually, that's not necessarily true. I think that, as I mentioned before, I think a truly savvy person can make complete use of social networks, whether it's, you know, the hideous Facebook or Google+. I mean, people are always being added every day. I mean, you must get easily 20, 30 emails for people you don't even know that are adding you. And I think that if somebody who has his stuff together, they can easily market to literally around the globe in a quarter of the time with a quarter of the effort.
I think if you put out good content and you do so consistently over a given period of time, that your audience snowballs even without that marketing brand. Now, it may not be exponential growth, but I don't think it's linear either. And
I think that's true. I mean, I would say that there's a limit to that. is what the major industries class as successful is not what's realistic. There's never going to be another, I mean, as going back to an earlier point, there's never going to be another Elton John. There's never going to be another Beatles, another Stones. The industry has moved completely on. Even the biggest artists of today, we're never going to get to that. So,
and that, I don't know if that's true.
But then it's not bad either.
Perhaps I wanted, not either. Before we move on, I wanted to talk about Cobra's question.
Yeah, yeah, I wanted to
answer
that, okay?
Is that okay? Okay.
You go first, and I'll answer. I got an answer too.
To get roughly back to that, there isn't necessarily a canonical place you can go to and get all the cool free stuff that's out there.
Canonical. Boo-hiss. Ubuntu. Boo-hiss. Okay. Sorry.
It's a word. There's a word before it was a company.
On you go.
Leave me alone. But I would say that I personally have in the last couple months been putting out new audio releases in my Google Plus stream. I know I don't want to take a big ding for that, but it's convenient for me and I can copy and paste and links work really well in it. If you want to follow the Open Source Musician Podcast, has their Google Plus stream, and I post audio that has not only Creative Commons and released freely, but is also produced using Linux and open source software. So that's one place to go. The other thing I'd like to say is that somewhere out there is a guy thinking, I don't have a lot of money and I really love free software and I wish I could find a way to give back. And to you, kind sir, I would say, if you can find a good way of aggregating a dissimilar type of content, say a group of podcasts with a group of free music releases with independently produced video on Linux and some of the other cool stuff that's coming out of the community, then do it.
That's a great idea. Yeah, that's a really good idea.
I'm not saying I know how, but I'm already So there's somebody else out there.
I know the biggest barrier and it is politics. You have to do a thing like that in an apolitical way, because otherwise there's this giant machine working against us all whose only goal is to divide us so that they can conquer us. And you have to do that in a way that politics doesn't get in the middle
do a thing like that. Define politics. I'm not quite following you, I don't think.
Boil it down to left and right, Democrat, Republican, liberal, conservative.
Oh, so you're talking about literal politics, like governmental.
Yes.
Oh, okay.
Yes, that is a barrier to entry for any conservative thinker. When you're talking about the arts, they have a hard time. Because I'm a very conservative thinker, we have a hard time coming into a forum that is art-centric, and it's that barrier is that people don't want to hear what we have to say. They don't want to hear the way that we think, even though we may agree on a vast number of things.
To Klaatu, you're asking about defining politics. There's a quote that I read on the internet somewhere. The internet is, it must be true, it's on the internet. Politics comes from two words, poly meaning many, and ticks meaning blood-sucking insects. So go figure.
I like that one.
And so to answer my answer anyway for Cobra 2's question, is there a place to get all of these things in one place? I think that's what Hacker Media was supposed to be, was a place that all these things could come together. It doesn't seem to have done that. It seems to maybe, from my perspective anyway, it seems like it's kind of withering on the vine. But I bet it could be revived if there was someone who could get excited about it and know how to do it, just like HPR was revived when Ken jumped in a year or so ago. And as you can see from what Ken did, to do a thing like that is a big job, because he's been working at it for a year. And we're just now getting to the point where we're trying to rally the people to take over for Ken. We want the community to do what Ken's been doing and keep HPR not just alive, but I mean really vibrant. And, you know, maybe Hacker Media is in the same state and needs the same kind of jump start. So that was going to be my answer to Cobra 2.
Well, I think there's a difference between making a huge fortune and being successful and making a living out of it. I think there are a lot of people who are quite happy to make a living out of doing something, but they'll never be a huge multi-billion-dollar artist, whatever field they're in, but they're quite happy to make a living out of it.
Yeah, that's a huge delay. You said that an hour ago.
In regards with what Pipe Man and Pokey said, I like the ideas of like these sort of aggregate places. They do seem efficient, but I'm just going to kind of, I guess, be the one not to go down that path and say, I don't think there are central places to find all the artwork, and I don't think that that's necessarily a bad thing. In the same way, I guess, that free software seems to have a lot of choices. I think that independent artists, you kind of have to look for it. You want to follow one of the artists and kind of get to know them and find out where they have all their stuff, and you find the good stuff that way. At least that's been my methodology, and I've done, I think, pretty well with it. And I just don't know. I mean, because to me, in the arts, a one central place that aggregates a whole bunch of stuff is either going to have, like, just stuff that the couple of curators happen to deem being, you know, good enough for their prestigious site, their aggregate site, or it's completely open forum and you really end up having to dig through it anyway, like kind of archive.org, some of the independent stuff that's up there. Some of it's really great. Some of it's just like, why is this here? So I don't know. I kind of feel like the divergence and the sort of multiple sources for independent art, I happen to kind of think that's a good thing, because then I can lock in on one or two people that I like and sort of follow them, and then find more people that like them, and then go down and find out what they're doing, and you kind of get into this, kind of get the feel of the lay of the land without having to just go to one superstore.
I guess that's... Make me think that any central repository like that actually worked would become the system that we have now, where the new guys and the small guys would just become noise.
Yeah, I think that's what I'm saying, yeah.
I guess what I took from that is that what we do isn't really just about content, is that we are a community.
Yeah.
And if you want to find the cool content, you got to get with the community.
Yes, and
you
got
to plug in. It's not enough for it to be dead.
Absolutely.
You have to be an active participant. You got to join a chat room. You got to talk to other people. You got to become part of it, because that's how we got into it. That's the way it works.
Yeah, I think with the mainstream stuff as well is. I don't know, I'm probably repeating myself. If I am, it's due to the alcohol. Blame the alcohol, don't blame me. Yeah, I know. Thing is, I mean, when a major distributor, whether it's movies, music, or whatever format it is, they look at things, they look at various things and see if it's, they estimate whether it's going to make X amount of money or not. And if it is, they'll do it. And if it's not, they don't. And if it's not, it might make a lot of money, but it's not quite enough to justify to break their levels to say, oh, it's profitable, therefore we should do it. So, I mean, there's plenty of stuff that the only stuff you hear or you see is the mainstream, the safe stuff that you see. There's a whole wide river of stuff that's been produced that's good enough, that's certainly making money for people, certainly popular enough, but it doesn't quite meet those standards. So that's another sort of thing to keep in mind. I mean, the independent mindset is... keeps that in mind, you know, it keeps getting that in focus.
Well, the main reason I brought up the question was I had an idea of how to centralize or somewhat centralize / aggregate Creative Commons media.
Yay!
I think this is going to point back to torrents.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah, this is a good idea.
I didn't see it coming.
No, this is a good idea. It is.
It's
a great idea, but I'm still going to stick to my guns and say that, I mean, I think it's a good idea, but I don't think it's a superstore model either, which is good.
No, and it's also not a central aggregation place. It's just a repository.
Yeah, yes. good point. I like it.
A book repository?
Very similar. He's talking about a concept. Cobra 2, why don't you explain it?
Yes.
All right, well, I'll try and explain, but my connection gets really, really fuzzy, and y'all break up a lot, so I can't hardly hear you sometimes. But
just remember to lift off the push to talk when you inhale, and it should take care of the whole buffer.
Yeah. Oh, am I in somebody's buffer or something?
No, I'm just saying, if you remember to lay off the key up, you know, then it won't do it as badly, I think. It's a guess. But go ahead.
Well, I'll try to anyways. So, like, you have a torrent site that has just everything that is Creative Commons. Anything that anybody ever put out under a Creative Commons license, there's a torrent for it. You have a place where you can index all the torrents and search through everything by anybody, and users would come along and would go through and tag, like, each individual torrent or group or whatever to allow other users to assign, you know, different types of groups of whatnot together. and allow like just somebody to stumble across the site and go, hey, I'm looking for X, and they type in X into a search bar and they get a list of similar artists or similar content. And it would have, the site would have pretty much everything Creative Commons, video, whatever, whatever somebody can seed.
So it's a tracker. It's a torrent tracker.
Essentially, but the tracker would be a private style tracker, right, where nobody could just add whatever torrent they wanted to. It would have to be approved.
Right. Agreed. I thought somebody was working on this.
Yeah, Cobra 2, yes, and the drunk guy.
Oh, it all makes sense now.
We were all doing wrong. Which drunk guy?
Yeah, that would be me.
The one who sounds like he's drunk when he's sober.
So does this torrent tracker run on Unix?
It can. I had it running on FreeBSD.
BSD? There you go.
How come it's not GNU BSD?
Ouch.
Was that it? That was the mention of BSD? That's what you wanted us to do, Unix Clubhouse? You didn't have anything to say?
Regex, out!
Yeah. As a matter of fact, that's exactly what I want.
Thank you for trolling us. We fell into your trap.
You know something? BSD sounds like STD. I don't know why.
I got BS in Tijuana, you know. A little bit of penicillin cleared it right up.
Did you get it from something called the basket something?
Is that what the B stands for?
Yeah.
Hey, Cobra 2, did you name your website? Did you say the name of your website?
Oh, no, it doesn't have a name. It doesn't exist. It's a project that I'm working on.
Oh, sweet. Okay, so how can people help you, or are you not asking for help at this time?
If you know PHP, you could help out a lot, or C++ to help modify the tracker.
And how can they get in touch with you for that?
I can toss a link in IRC of just like some concepts that I have.
Okay, and if you got a way to get in touch, well, I would say, yeah. I see Cobra 2 all the time in Oddcast Planet on the IRC, on the Freenode IRC network.
Yeah, that'd probably be a good way.
I don't own Freenode 24/7.
Yeah, I just want to cut in here and say that the CC tracker thing was initially my idea, but Cobra 2 has been absolutely phenomenal in taking it on. I've had too many things in my mind, and I've not really done anything with it. But Cobra 2 has been absolutely fantastic in taking it on. And it's still alive, still going, but he's the guy that's doing the coding. So whatever he says on the technical side goes.
Cool.
I think it's a fantastic idea, and best of luck to you.
Well, the project for me was just to teach myself PHP, and that was the whole idea, but it kind of evolved into me needing to know more than just PHP to do what I wanted to do.
I think I was pretty hopped up on PHP when I got that BSD in Tijuana.
It's a noble way to learn PHP, I'll give you that.
Nothing. I got nothing for that. Nothing.
No, you got mental recognition from me. There was a chuckle. I just didn't press to talk to chuckle.
Okay.
What is mental recognition?
That is the one problem with push to talk is that you have to remember to hit it to laugh at somebody.
Yeah, I just chuckled and I didn't press to chuckle, so now I need to press to chuckle so that I can fake a chuckle, you know, so
You know, it just feels like my jokes die.
I feel that's success. Mental recognition is success.
There you go. Pipe Man, don't release a DVD of your stand-up yet. Don't quit your day job, but, you know, you're getting there.
Couple of open mic nights, a little maybe improv here and there.
All right, I'll clean up the act.
Yeah.
There's a difference. I might want to point this out just for people that are curious. There's a difference between mental recognition and menthol recognition. One is a sort of mint-flavored thing, and the other's like a mind thing.
I like them both. I appreciate both of them. If you want to send them to me.
We'll send mints.
You have been listening to Hacker Public Radio at hackerpublicradio.org. We are a community podcast network that releases shows every weekday, Monday through Friday. Today's show, like all our shows, was contributed by a HPR listener like yourself. If you ever considered recording a podcast, then visit our website to find out how easy it really is. Hacker Public Radio was founded by the Digital Dog Pound and the Infonomicon Computer Club. HPR is funded by the Binary Revolution at binrev.com. All BinRev projects are proudly sponsored by Lunar Pages. from shared hosting to custom private clouds, go to lunarpages.com for all your hosting needs. Unless otherwise stated, today's show is released under a Creative Commons Attribution Share Alike 3.0 license.